Yeah, flip-flop.
They're just being lazy. That's why it's a pushback.
I think it's pure half-assery on the part of Doug Ford.
I didn't use that term exactly,
she didn't say half-assery.
Time to feel the rush of the round table.
All right, welcome to it. For Wednesday, the 4th of September, our round table begins. The originator of half-assery joins us in studio, News Talk 1010 political analyst Scott Reed. Hello, Scott.
Hello.
Jessica.
You're full-assery, as far as I'm concerned, Jay.
Thank you, sir. I guess that was a compliment.
Jessica
Arnsandu, senior consultant at Crestview Strategies, back again. Good to see you, sir.
Yep.
And joining us from the National Post is Christy Blatchford. Hello, Christy.
Hello.
Let's start off with the Ford government. They're seeking public comment on proposed regulatory changes. I'm not going to read it the way they wrote it. They're looking for people's feedback when it comes to photo radar. The city of Toronto has made it so that they want to have the power to put photo radar in school zones and community zones to police these more effectively. The municipalities, some of the smaller municipalities have also indicated that they want the same thing to happen. Christy, I think that this is more common sense in today's world that, you know, why even bother reaching out to the public? I think this is a good idea for these particular areas of town.
Speaking of half-assery, I think governments always consult on things they don't need to bother consulting and never ask the people, really, on the important stuff, you know. So I'm a bit cynical on this. I agree with you. I don't think they need to do it, and I don't even care if they do it. I just want there to be photo radar so people pay some sort of penalty for going through a red light.
Jaskaran, this used to be a big issue. A lot of people would say, you know, we didn't want this. How can you prove who's driving the car? I think we've sort of evolved past that because we've seen a number of accidents involving pedestrians and speeding, specifically through school zones, that this might be more appetizing for people than it once was.
Yeah, I think when it comes to school zones and our kids, we always want more safety. I don't think that's controversial. Also, it's something that I've seen a lot lately. I don't know if it's just me being old, but when I look back, we didn't have as many people being dropped off in cars to schools. I feel like now every school zone, every school is just a chaos of cars and traffic everywhere. And there's full out traffic jams beside any school when you're driving through a neighborhood or even beside main roads. And so with that comes, you know, the need for extra scrutiny to ensure that those spaces are safe when cars are driving through.
Yes, Scott.
And a couple of years ago, I think it was, in the Glenview John Ross Robertson, or is that the right other school that's right beside it? Two teachers were struck by a car because of the chaos that you're talking about. It's outrageous.
Yes, Scott, a lot of our parking lots in front of schools, or even the areas in front of schools, have looked like more like a Costco parking lot on the weekend than they do what they used to look like.
Yeah, it does. For sure it does. I know that from dropping my own kid off at school. Wait a minute.
You're part of the problem.
I am.
Shame on you.
No, I'm kidding. I put my kid on the bus. But, you know, I don't understand your outrage, in all honesty.
About what?
About
what outrage?
Like who?
Did I sound outraged?
Yeah, you're like wound up. Why do they need to consult on this? Why don't they just do it?
It's just like I elected you. Just do it already.
So,
this is common sense.
Okay,
you don't have to pretend you're asking people. Just get it done so that they can implement these things.
I never cut the Ford government slack. But if they take 90 days to like hear different people's submissions on this stuff and then they move
here's
on
here's why it matters.
I think it's inevitable what the outcome is. I think if the city of Toronto wants to do photo radar in these places, then that's that. If you think they're trying to cover their ass politically, is that what's going on? Is that what you're saying?
I think that every single government that we have, whether it's liberal or conservative in this country, is taking this route of covering their ass politically to say, oh, the people wanted it or the people didn't want it. And that's meek. It's cowardly. The reason that this
until
is a big deal.
Until you don't like the decision and then you go, why in hell didn't government ask anybody about this?
Yeah, but then we have a remedy. It's called an election. The reason that this is a big deal is the school year. The school year started yesterday and now these cameras won't be in place until January if they get approved through whatever focus group we seem to be running government through.
I don't know. Amen. I think you're being overwhelmed.
Thank you, Christy.
Speaking of consultation and lack thereof, it's being billed as access to free Wi-Fi on GO buses and trains, announced today, the province signing an agreement offering Wi-Fi on all 532 GO buses, all 943 train coaches. And in the same announcement, we're being told that it's going to cost $65 million for a five-year wireless internet contract. You have to wonder, Christy, is this a great example of consultation maybe being needed, that maybe we could have done something like this perhaps privately? I know there's some big wireless providers that would probably love the opportunity.
I'd like to know if they were asked, even. Certainly, I agree with you. I mean, I think Wi-Fi, like it or not, and most people love it, and I use it all the time when I've taken the GOLD bus, actually. I didn't have wireless, but I had a, you know, a hard provider. So I think it's a necessity in the modern world. It's a pain in the butt also, because you never interact with anybody. And I don't understand why they couldn't get some sort of sponsorship deal. And as I say, I'd like to know if they tried.
Yeah, Scott, are you also curious as to why this didn't go down the consultation route?
No, because I understand why it didn't go down the consultation route.
Well, please enlighten
us. So why would you... Okay, so your question was, gee, did anybody ask the private sector providers who'd like to provide something they provide for profit instead for free? I bet they said, no thanks. So here's the reality. Wi-Fi is the electricity of the 21st century. And in 1915, when we were building out telephone poles and electrical poles across the country, we didn't say it's costing us $50,000 to wire Marmara, Ontario. We said that's part of being together. This is the new century. This is the water. This is the electricity of our new economy and our new century. And so I'm sorry, but we're going to see more of this, not less of it. There will not be 40 years from now a single space that is not Wi-Fi free that's covered in this country.
Scott, I don't know if I agree with Scott on this one. I think we probably had have done this privately. I think we probably could have ended up getting a lot better deal because this seems like a lot of money for 5 years.
Did you watch the CRTC ruling last week where Bell and others are rolling back their build out saying, sorry, we're appealing to cabinet. We are not willing to build this stuff across a sparse, hugely geographic space that is Canada for anything less than market rate. So no one's building this stuff in the private sector
just
for
Scott,
free.
I have to cut Scott off. I mean, his sucking up to the Ford government needs to end here.
It needs to end. I agree. It's a slippery slope, man.
Look, at the end of the day, I am a user of GO Transit. Please don't take this away from me. I am looking forward to free Wi-Fi. I can't watch YouTube like with the free conscience right now, and I need that Wi-Fi. So do not take this away from me. But also, this is like an exercise of developing and providing more reasons for taking transit, right? That's the way I look at this. This is almost like a public good. If I know I can get free Wi-Fi on the GO Transit, and I'm someone who's going to take transit or open to it, this just makes me more likely to take GO over, let's say, another mode of transportation. This just gives me another incentive to get out of my car and hop on the Kitchener line and make that 45-minute commute, and please add more GO lines and GO trains.
Yeah, well, you know, $65 million would go a long way in doing that as well.
Yeah, that's like one car on
a
GO train.
Yeah, but I guess you got some Wi-Fi to show at the end of it. Do you care what companies the CPP, the Canada Pension Plan, invests in? There's a report out today talking about CPP holdings that we've got quite a few in firearms firms, handgun manufacturers in the United States, Smith & Wesson, Ruger & Olin Corporation, which produces ammunition for the AR-15. Christy, you know, we had an interesting conversation about this. The majority seem to say, no, profit comes first, but they'll still be the same people who go up to Facebook or Twitter and throw out as much hate as they can towards American gun laws.
Yeah, I bet that's true. I'm torn on it. I think most people would be, because you do not want to do anything to encourage the further proliferation of guns, especially in the States. So you don't want to support manufacturers of, you know, particularly big human killing guns. But this is a small percentage of, you know, CPP's holdings. And if you want to ethically invest in only things that suit your conscience, you're better off just getting an advisor and doing it that way and sucking it up, I guess, when it comes to the CPP.
Yeah, Scott, some people do that. They do, you know, look for ethical investments in their own life. They go to their own broker. They go down to the bank branch to find out what they can do, you know, maybe to sleep better at night when it comes to their money.
Yeah, they do. And, you know, frankly, the jury's in on this, right? Like major institutional investors and asset managers and pension funds like CPPIB have elaborate policies to say, all right, we think there's a public sentiment about this and we're not going to invest there. And they do. And it's not just ethical investing. Like, that's a really loaded phrase. Like, there are things where we will not invest in oil, but then there's whole other things where they go, well, you know, that's a no-fly zone. Like, this brand has become toxic because of something that occurred 3 weeks ago. And so they have to put in place processes. But those processes don't snap into place overnight, because when you have $400 billion and it's probably an indirect ownership of three companies down that amounts to $37 million of subsidiary of some other company. Like, it takes time for them to figure that out. And then they got to go, whoa, okay, like, is this thing one of those things where people will go bananas? Or is this one of those things where we go, shrug the shoulders and go? I think it's one of those things they probably got to get out of. But it takes a little time to figure that out. And I cut them some slack for that because it's not easy.
Just, Karen, when we looked at it, a lot of people, if they weren't in favor of just profit, they were also surprised that this was actually a thing.
Yeah, it's, look, I think we're coming into, I think we're getting into a stage where I think everyone's a little more conscious about where they're putting their money. I think there's a lot more of a social justice conversation about a lot, everything that we're doing. And it's not easy on the other side as well, because you have these huge portfolios, you got money everywhere, you're diversifying where your investments are. And, you know, sometimes what's ethical or not can be a little arbitrary depending on who you're talking to and the person. It is subjective. So how do you do that at the same time as, you know, running something that's so big and so large? You know, I have certain things that I won't invest in. And that's something that's, you know, personal. Mm-hmm. And that may not be what you don't want to invest in. So it is a tricky thing to kind of work around and try your best. Just right now, guns being in the news so often, all these mass shootings just makes it really toxic right now. And you kind of see that societal norms changing a bit, that here's something we won't invest in. And you hit like this critical mass, a tipping point where, yeah, maybe it is time to divest from that.
A really interesting release of stats today when it comes to patients and seemingly our lack thereof. We're finding out that 3/4 of us surveyed that we believe that the dominance of digital technology like smartphones and on-demand are what is to blame for our growing lack of patience. Some of the findings they found, the amount of time before we got impatient with things happening, waiting for a movie or TV to start streaming a show, 22 seconds, waiting for a completely dead phone to turn on once you plug it in, 11 minutes, waiting for someone to respond to an important email, frustration sets in by about 90 minutes. Are you at all surprised by these stats, Christy?
No, I get frustrated by almost all of those things way sooner than the average.
I would have thought you would have been more patient.
No, I aspire to be more zen about things, but it doesn't usually work.
Now, just Karen, I find that when I'm at work, I'm a lot more patient because I'm on the clock. But when I'm at home on my own time, it's like, whoa, let's go. Let's make this happen. I don't know what it is like for you.
Yeah, I think when it's on someone else's dime, you're a little more patient than when it's on your own at home and you're competing with like other interests that you have at home and other things that are competing with it. But like, you know, patience, I think it's a relative thing, right? Your anchor, where it's set at, it changes over time. And so a lot of these examples, some of them have to do with like internet or stuff that you're using over the web. Yeah, there was a point in time where it took you 20 minutes just to log in. And then it was not even a positive that you're actually going to get anything downloaded. And
then your mom picks up the phone.
And then it's game over.
Right? It's the worst.
And so that anchor was set differently. And now it's if something's not loading in 20 sec or 2 seconds, yeah, it's like something's wrong with this phone. And
Scott,
I need to restart.
Our resident Buddha of patience.
Oh, yeah.
Your thoughts?
I get so angry about these surveys.
there you go.
I'm like everybody else. We're spoiled, right? I don't think we're wrong to be spoiled about this stuff. I mean, there is a certain service demand and a certain service culture that's emerged. So, you know, when my ISP tells me that I've got service all the time and then I don't get service, or then it's like, oh, well, what we didn't tell you was that was prorated or this is throttled and all that, I get wound up about it. And I think I should, because I pay hundreds of dollars a month on this stuff. So, yeah, I get pissy.
I get most wound up when I'm trying to complain about some of these service providers. You know, you send the email, they don't even acknowledge the email. So then you phone and you are slowly jackbooted through a system that takes hours. You ever call Rogers Hall?
You get the person that's got the script that says, yes, I understand that. It can be very frustrating to deal with problems such as these. Ma'am, I ask you your middle name and your father's date of birth?
Ma'am, do not use that tone with
me. Scott Reed, Christy Blatchford, Jessica Hansandu. Thank you all.